On this week's Currently Trending, running, mountaineering, and the first hijabi model to be featured in an international night campaign. Hello and welcome to Harper's Bazaar Arabia's weekly Currently Trending podcast. I'm Elizabeth Kelly, social media and content manager here at Harper's, and with me in the studio this week is Manal Rostam, the first athlete in the world to run a major race wearing the Nike Pro hijab. Welcome, Manal, and thank you so much for joining me today in the Harper's Bazaar Arabia studio.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
I have been going through your list of achievements and they are so great. They are pretty much almost unbelievable. So can you kind of list your achievements so far from like, is it 2012?
So I started like taking mountaineering, like not really serious, but like taking it up pretty much in 2012. So that was my first big mountain. So that was Kilimanjaro in 2012. Then I went off to do Mount Kenya in 2013, Mount Elbrus, which is the highest in Russia, in 2015. And then I led a team up to Everest Base Camp in 2016. Then I attempted Mount Aconcagua, which is the second highest mountain in the world. I attempted it, but unfortunately, it wasn't a successful attempt because we couldn't reach the top. That was in 2017. And it was a part of my training to become the first Egyptian woman to climb Everest. Because I still dream of becoming the first Egyptian woman to climb Everest, you know?
So let's rewind right back to the beginning. How did you fall into running and fitness and mountaineering? Because I know that wasn't your profession, was 100%. It? Start.
Yeah. So I lost my job 2 years ago from the pharmaceutical industry. Like I practice, like I have a clinical pharmacy degree in clinical pharmacy, obviously. And I was practicing pharmacy for like 14 years, was with a very prominent pharmaceutical company for 9 years. And then I was made redundant 2 years ago. And honestly, like it broke my heart. And I'm very open about talking about this because people don't realize that losing a job can be very close to, you know, losing a close person. And it's a hardship, yeah? At the time, I was doing fitness on the side as a side hustle. I had gotten certified as a fitness instructor back in 2013. And I was just like doing my, you know, chilled out spinning classes on the side during, you know, my free time and stuff. And I had also hooked up with Nike, but we'll talk about this separately, in 2014. And I was also doing like part-time classes for them in 2015. Now, when I lost my job, you know, it really smashes everything in your life.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you lose your job, it's like, who are you? Like, what is your identity? And I thought of taking time off. And I did try to get back into pharma, like to work as a pharmacist, but I wasn't successful. Like, nobody wants to take back the one who's like always traveling and up mountains and running the world and stuff for some reason. As a woman, when you come off as strong and independent and you know your goals,
yeah,
away from the fact that you just want to set up a family and have like 2 or 3 kids, even though that's an amazing, amazing, amazing thing to have. But sometimes, you know, life doesn't give you a husband and 3 or 4 kids that every woman, I'm sure, at the back of her head aspires to have. You know, sometimes, you know, life sort of deviates from the norm and you just got to go with it. And for me, that's what happened. And that's why I started taking my athletic passion seriously. I've always been a runner. I was a part of the track and field team since I was 14 or 13 years old.
Okay.
Back in high school. You know, I grew up in Kuwait and I was in an international school and they take physical education really seriously. Like it's a part of your curriculum. You have to be like a part of a team. So I was on the track and field team. I was doing cross country like competitions, you know, 400 meters, 800 meters, relay 400 meters. I wasn't good at 100 meters though, because I'm not very fast. So yeah, but then, you know, you graduate from high school and you don't really... you know, change.
Yeah.
Nothing changes. You know, I took it to university. I was also on the team. I was participating in a lot of like cross-country races and stuff on track and field. And then I never stopped running pretty much. Like I don't have the story where, you know, like I was very big and I was not eating healthy. And then all of a sudden I wanted to do the shift. Even though that's a very great inspirational story, it's not mine. I've always had, you know, this healthy conscience thing alive and always, always, always loved running. Like if I would tell you, like running saved my life 100%. For me, like running honestly was my savior. Getting over having a body image disorder, I've always felt fat. Always felt fat, even though I looked pretty much the same all my life. But I've always looked at the mirror. I would cry thinking like, you know, I have really big thighs. And what I didn't understand is that my thighs were big because I'm muscular.
Yeah.
And that's what was actually enabling me to do what I was able to do.
Healthy.
Exactly.
Yeah. When was your kind of first marathon? Was it 2014?
Right, that's right. Yeah. I attempted my first marathon, like, you know, because I thought if I can climb a mountain, I might as well, you know, attempt a marathon. Like, I'm not making it seem easy at all. Before New York, which happened last November 2017, I had run about 7 marathons year to date. And around the region, I've done Dubai twice. I had done Dubai twice. I did Kuwait. I had done Luxor Marathon, which is Egypt's most prominent marathon. I had become the first Egyptian woman to run the China Wall Marathon in 2016. But then I found out, you know, after all these marathons, that there's something called six majors that exists in the marathon world, okay? Six majors means that there are six prominent marathons around the world that are they're like on a pedestal for all the marathoners. So if you complete that, you get a big medal, you know, with all the six cities. So there is Chicago, there is Boston, there's New York, there's London, there's Tokyo, and there's Berlin. And to get in, you need to be like a super, super marathon. Like you need, you know, a phenomenal finisher's time that I will never be able to qualify to any of these marathons. However, charity organizations, they have a charity bibs. So charities go in, they get bibs from the marathon organizers for free, but then all the marathons would need to raise a certain amount of money to be able to run under a certain charity. So I found out that I can do that. And honestly, like New York seemed like magic. Imagine running throughout New York, like the five boroughs, because you start, you know, from one borough and then you finish in Central Park. Like, how amazing is that, you know? So I got in touch with one charity organization. It was called Back on My Feet. It's a U.S.-based charity, and it raises money for the homeless in the U.S. And basically, I had to raise about $2,500. Nike helped me out. To raise, because so Nike basically sponsored the charity bib, and I was to become the first ever marathoner to run in the Nike Pro Hijab.
Wow.
Which, having been the face of it in March 2017, honestly gave that a purpose of, you know, being the face of the Nike Pro Hijab. So I'm not just like, I mean, I respect all the models out there, but like, if you're not doing something with your image and with your identity, how are you inspiring the other little girls, you know? So I wanted to be the real life example of someone who became the face of something that had never been available worldwide to cater for Muslim athletes. And I wanted to show them that I'm not just the face of the brand, but rather I will also go on run,
yeah,
you know, run with it for 4 hours, 42 minutes in a very, very cold New York City. Like, I cried, I laughed, I danced. It was crazy. It was crazy marathon. Crazy.
That sounds incredible. So kind of your next, you've not done a net marathon since, have you, since New York?
No, I've actually done, I've done two marathons since New York.
Okay.
So I've done a Muscat Marathon in January. I was sponsored by, you know, they invited me to go and run Muscat Marathon. And actually, I got a PB in Muscat because it's so flat. So my time in New York, get this, my time in New York was 4 hours 42. I shaved off 20 minutes, which
How?
Is a lot. Look, many, many reasons, to be honest. I was in a very good state of mind when I went to Muscat Marathon. The atmosphere was amazing. It's a very flat marathon. The weather was amazing. It was very cool breeze. No wind, because, you know, the wind affects your speed 100%. I was wearing very nice shoes also. I'm not sure if I can mention them or not, but it was one of the latest by Nike. And they are like scientifically proven to give you a PB. And I did get a PB.
Yeah, you got it.
4:20. I finished Muscat Marathon, 4:20. 20 minutes shaved off just like that. And honestly, I hadn't really trained excessively or anything. It was just a good state of mind. And an amazing playlist, I have to add.
Okay.
But then I also did Cairo Marathon, which is the first ever Cairo Marathon. Again, I was invited. You know, people just invite me. They just send me, drop me an email. It's like, would you be interested to run the marathon? I'm bullied, you know? And I'm like, oh, sure. Like, let's
I'll
run
do it.
22 kilometers. Fly me in. So, yeah, so I did Muscat Marathon and Cairo Marathon after November. I have two signed up. Harper's Bazaar gets the privilege of knowing. So I'm doing Berlin in September.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's going to be my second
major one.
And then I'm doing Chicago in October, back to back. Yeah, I just hope I come out with no injuries, but I'm following up very closely with my chiropractor and they're really watching over me.
So you're going to get three under your belt now.
Yeah.
So then
three majors and then three more majors. Yeah. And that will be my 10th marathon. So Berlin hopefully will be my 10th marathon. And then Chicago will be my 11th, hopefully. Yeah.
Okay. Incredible. Overall. And I know from not from a running perspective, but you're planning to conquer Everest again.
I hope so. It's a dream. Like, it's any mountaineer's dream, you know. I don't know if I'll be able to because it's hardcore. It goes without saying. I've done Everest Base Camp and, you know, I led a team up and I remember getting so sick. Yeah, I was so sick and I couldn't tell anyone because I'm like, you know, so much for being a leader who gets sick just like on day two. Like I got this minor, like, you know, chest infection and I was coughing insanely. Like I remember some of the other mountaineers, they're like, we heard your coughing like all throughout the night last night. I think you should go down. And you know, you can't tell that to someone. And I remember talking to my doctor. I called him from there and he said, Manel, you got to be honest with yourself. You know, your life is online. You got to be really honest. And I was like, you know what? I'm not a fool. Like, I don't take risks just like that. I take calculated risks. I was like, I'm going to start an antibiotic and I'll see what it's like. Because Nepal is like, you know, the chances of getting a chest infection anywhere in the world goes without saying is very high. But then Nepal specifically, because of all the climbers from all around the world, if your immunity is not like, you know, tip top, like it's you're at risk, you know. I'm anemic. Yet I still climb.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I'm on iron supplements since I was like 18 years old. But I mean, it doesn't stop me from anything, you know? Mm. I mean, as long as I know that I'm monitoring my hemoglobin level and stuff, then I'm fine. And I did it. So I know Everest is going to be really, really tough, especially that after I attempted Aconcagua, it was so cold, you know? It was so, like, I'm a desert girl.
Yeah.
You know, and it went down to minus 20 degrees. I really felt like my heart was going to stop from how cold it was. I swear, I'm not joking. And I'm not trying to say this or pretend like, you know, I'm a strong mountaineer. I remember being stuck in that snowstorm for 72 hours when the snowstorm hit. And that's why we had to go down, you know, locked up in a tent, freezing. I had everything on me, like all the gear. And I remember my heart, I felt my heart was trembling from how cold it was. And I would speak to my fingers, begging them not to freeze or end up, you know, with like a frozen extremity or something, because I felt like this is it. You know, I'm going to die. You know, I'm not going to wake up tomorrow. Like my tent is going to fly off. And that's because the wind, I remember they gave us the records. It was like 80 kilometers per hour speed wind.
Wow.
Yeah.
So after kind of conquering kind of the base camp, why do you want to do the peak, the summit, after that experience?
Everyone asks me that. I ask myself that. One, it's there, of course. Like, I mean, because, like, why wouldn't you want to attempt, like, the highest mountain? Two, in Egypt, like, so I'm Egyptian. In Egypt, we are 100 million Egyptians. 100 million. We only have one male Egyptian who has done Everest out of the 100 million. Like, I mean, it's funny because it's really funny. I mean, I respect him and everything, but like, it's funny because, you know, when you travel on these expeditions and then you meet people from like Sweden, Europe, whatever, you know, the States, South America, North America, whatever. And then they ask you like, so how many people in Egypt have actually, you know, climbed Everest? And then in Sweden, I think there's like a few and I don't have the numbers at the top of my head. And then in Egypt, you just say one. Why? Like, why isn't there an Egyptian woman who actually represented and raised the flag from the top of Everest? Like, it's just a sense of pride. Even though I haven't, you know, I didn't grow up in Egypt and, you know, I don't really feel like as a third culture kid, I'm not pure Egyptian. I don't feel pure Egyptian. But I would love to represent Egypt in such an extreme environment and because no one else has done it, you know?
It'd be an incredible achievement.
Inshallah, let's see what happens. I don't know, you know? Like I'm training. I'm calling out for all the sponsors out there. It's really hard because it's a lot of money, but let's see what happens.
How long did your base camp track take?
We had to compress it to 10 days because we missed. We couldn't fly to Lukla for like 5 days. The weather was really, really bad. And you know that you have to take the most dangerous flight from Kathmandu to Lukla. And we had to wait on the weather for 5 days. So that sort of like affected our expedition time. So we ended up taking helicopter, you know, and then we had to just compress the time. But it was really, really challenging. Like, I would not ever, like, recommend that someone doing it would just compress it to only 10 days, you know. The reason why I do it, honestly, in all honesty, is just, like, it combines my love for nature with my love for physical exertion, basically. And just feeling that sense of wholeness, you know, when you conquer something like that. And marathons, likewise. They make me feel like I'm capable, I'm able, I'm stronger than they think I am. I'm more capable than they give me credit for, you know? And I'm very insecure. Like, I can be very insecure, you know, but then these things give me reasons to be, you know. We grew up around metaphors like, it's so hard, it's like climbing a mountain. But then I go and climb the actual mountain physically. So in my head, I have actually overcame this, you know, big hardship in my mind. Mm.
Listen to you talk is just inspiring as it is. And you're a woman of many firsts and you've broken like every glass ceiling going. But what's next? Like, how can you even top what you've done? You know, do you ever think, sit back and think, well, I've pretty much done Everest or I'm doing Everest next year. Like, I'm just going to chill now. Like, what kind of goes through your mind?
I want to tell you something. Like, I've never actually spoken about this, but thank you so much for this question because it really puts things into perspective. When I started out chasing those marathons or mountain climbing just because I wanted to try what it felt like, I remember clearly this time, and this is a very emotional moment for me right now because I remember 10 years ago, I would look at all these women featured in magazines for doing whatever, you know, like inspirational things. And I would sit and wonder, feeling that small little 28-year-old girl, what would it take for me to be invited to like talk or share my experience or even be featured in a magazine? And then fast forward 10 years later, because I have built a resume of achievements that I have, you know, fought for sweat, tears, and blood, literally, Elizabeth, literally. I fought for every single accomplishment, sweat, tears, and blood. I just feel very, 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 you know, like proud that I fought for my right to achieve all these dreams. So, however, having said that, at 30, you know, when I woke up and I'm like, you know what, this has to stop. I'm not going to surrender to what society thinks. It puts a lot of pressure on you. Like, you can't just like chill out anymore and be like, yeah, I'm going to take a break for 2 years or whatever. Because now you have a massive following of people who live their dreams in their minds through you. So like you're asking me, so what's next for Manal Rostam, you know? Like, I got injured a couple of months ago and I had to take time off my running. And honestly, it was the nightmarish time of my life because I was like, I have all these marathons signed up for and I have all these mountains and I felt like, what if I'm not able to achieve them? You know, what will I give to society? And it becomes a burden in a way because it's like, you feel like so helpless and you can't be a normal human being anymore.
Do you kind of feel like you'd let your fans down, people who look up to you 100%,
down? 100%. I don't want them to think that, you know, that icon of strength that they have built inside their minds or they follow. You know, I like, first of all, like, I really, really, really appreciate everyone's support. And obviously, thank you so much for giving me a voice to come here today and share my story. Like I said, 10 years ago, I never, ever, ever thought this was going to happen. And also when I started, you know, seeking all these, you know, marathons, I never thought I'd be anything big, you know, but then one accomplishment after the other, when I became the first, I was like, wow, I never give myself credit enough that I deserve, you know? So what's next for me? Like I said, I'd love to finish, you know, the 6 majors. I'd love to finish, you know, the 7 highest mountains in every continent, the 7 summits. Just because I feel like right now I'm on a journey and a lot of people are watching and I don't want to let anyone down, you know? And if I, like, for example, when I couldn't summit Aconcagua and a lot of people were waiting for that Egyptian flag, you know, to be raised on the top, it took so much courage of me to go on Facebook that day, and I remember I was crying to share that post, you know, where I said that, guys, this is not your traditional post where I say that, you know, I've reached the top. Like, I'm getting emotional because Aconcagua really broke me as well. And I said, but I really fought hard to reach the top, but sometimes the mountain is not welcoming and that's okay and you need to come down. And, you know, I got so much support that day, like, because people really felt for me, but at the same time, I felt like I let them down, you know, everyone behind me.
I think that everyone has to remember that even though you do seem and you come across like superhuman, you are just a human at the end of the day. Yeah, you're an incredible woman who's climbed a mountain, but sometimes
100%.
You can't achieve it. It's just...
Thank you for mentioning that in particularly, you know, especially the human aspect of it. Because, for example, you know, with social media specifically, sometimes you are, you know, massively bullied on social media for everything that you stand for, everything that you do. And people, you know, who have the time and audacity to send you comments sometimes that are very offensive, they don't realize that, you know, at the end of the day, fine, you could be classified as a mini celebrity or a mini influencer or whatever, but at the end of the day, you are human. You know, I'm literally the girl next door who had a few dreams, who was brave enough to follow them and stand up before my parents and be like, let's have an open conversation here. Why can't I climb that mountain? Why can't I get on a plane and go run a marathon and come back safe?
Thank you so much for coming and talking to us today. It's been absolutely incredible. And good luck.
Thank you for listening. If you're new to Currently Trending, don't forget to subscribe as we have some exciting content coming your way soon. Make sure you rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts too. See you next week.